Hey everybody, welcome to the first official episode of the Snapcast. It's at least twice as good as Fantastic Four and 100% cheaper. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Rob.
I'm Chris.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about the standard meta first, and then we'll be coming back to talk about proper sideboarding. So let's get into the first segment. How do you guys feel about Origin Standard so far?
I like it. It's brought even... I didn't think Standard could have more decks than it did, and now it does.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of the variety.
I think it's a great change from where we were with the Return of Ravnica and Theros block, just because a new set comes out, and it actually does shake up the format a bit.
It did add stuff. And it was weird, because like just like one card made a deck possible, like Rally. Everybody was trying to break it, and then Nintaku Husk, a reprint that hasn't been seen in forever, comes, and like, oh, look, now this deck's playable.
That's a legit combo deck in Standard.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so far we've seen what? We've seen the Abzan Rally deck, the Blue-Red Thopter deck, the return of Jeskai Aggro.
Yep. The Thopter Spine Over control, either blue-white or blue-black.
Yep, two variations of control now, too. So, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Mono-Red came back with a passion.
Yeah. Pile Driver. But see, that's one we haven't seen that much lately.
No, it wasn't Pile Driver, it was Firecraft.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Like, it's the uncounterable finisher was what they needed instead of the Pile Driver, which is just another aggressive creature, which are dime a dozen.
What does Firecraft do?
Sorcery speed, 1/2 red, deal 4 damage to target player. Spellcraft.
Spell mastery.
Oh, sorry, spell mastery cannot be countered by spells or abilities.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's nice.
It is preventable, luckily, but there's not really a big prevent damage card running around. But in the future, it might have to be played to just stop dying to it.
Yeah.
But talking about preventing damage, too, also Fog.
Turbo Fog.
Yeah, that's another one.
Turbo Fog Mill with Sphinx's Tutelage, another Origins card making an impact.
Yeah. So, I mean, so three of us played game day yesterday. Alex, I know you were running the blue-black
Thopter Control.
How do you feel about the deck so far?
I really like it. Jim Davis was the first one to play it. I've since changed a few things. I personally like Sidisi in the deck, the Undead Vizier, the mono-black, not the three-color, just to sack Spare Thopter, sack Hangerback Walker, and Tutor. Like, it's just, it takes a built-in, what was a built-in, like, 2-for-1, and just makes it pure value.
Did any matchups give you a hard time yesterday?
No, the only real bad matchup is Mono Red, and it wasn't there yesterday. And that's just, once again, they're pretty aggressive, which is always bad against control, and then the uncounterable finisher is what, like I said, has made that deck playable, and it's really good.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised. I don't think we saw a single person playing Mono Red yesterday, which I had built my sideboard expecting like to play it every round. But
I mean, that's typically the case. It was just yesterday was really weird.
Chris, how did Heroic do for you?
Heroic didn't do very well. I think the Bant is just not my style. It's made for a little bit more of the long game. And like I said, I like to finish it quick. I really like the Jeskai build of it.
With Temur Battle Rage.
The Temur Battle Rage, because it's like no blocks. If you have it and they don't block, I mean, you can potentially just blow them out, and they're either on tilt. But I found myself looking at the Fog deck more than paying attention, because it just looks fun. The card Sphinx's Tutelage, that's going to be my card.
Fair enough.
That's what I ran yesterday, and it actually did a lot better than I thought it would. I've been testing it online quite a bit the last week, because the list that the Open generated was like, obviously untuned. I mean, it was a good starting place, but there are a lot of inconsistencies, things I didn't like about it. So I've been messing around with that, made some changes. The biggest one being adding Disperse to the main board, and that, I mean, man, that was good in every single matchup. So that came in handy a lot throughout the day. Ended up 2-2 overall, but the loss in the fourth round was, you know, mulligans and getting stuck on land. So
that's always rough whenever you lose to mulligans, and you know it's because you're looking at a 4 or 5 card starting hand and you're already so far behind.
Yeah, there was 2 in the 5. I had to keep it, and then just every draw step was painful. I was on the play, so I didn't get to draw the first turn either, but I figured I'd see one sooner than I did, and by the time I did, it was just too far gone. But you know,
well, that's just how it is.
Well, you could just tell from your list too that you'd put a little more time and thought into it, especially when it came to the sideboard, where the one that they ran at the Open, it just looked like 15 good cards, but neither one had a specific point.
No real
matchups. Was torn between if I want to go with the creature beatdown, I think the tutelage plan's where it's at.
Yeah, I played against it at regionals, and he brought in the Icefall Regents. He was still running the Icefall Regents aside and brought him in, and I Ashioked him and gave me extra threats to just keep beating him down. It was like the worst idea.
Yeah, now maybe in the matchup, you know, with you having Ashioks, but I think with like so much green-red devotion running around now, like the Icefall Regents are okay. They do, it's a threat, and it does something. It taps them down.
And it's decently hard to deal with because you have to pay two more to single spot removal it. But like, it's just like in this spot where like they're banking on people taking out creature removal so they can try to bring in creatures, and that doesn't always work because sometimes people just don't have enough sideboard cards to bring in or take out, and they leave stuff in and you catch them.
Like, yeah, I think most decks running black have too many kill spells in the main versus their sideboard, so they have to leave some in, and then they also have the thought of, they might bring in finishers, they might bring in planeswalkers, so the downfalls are staying in.
Right.
So you just don't really want to turn on that removal. I'm really torn because I had a few alternate win cons in the sideboard, and I think those might be coming out entirely and just go all in on the tutelage plan.
I still like QR in that deck. I think it needs to be in the 75 because like it does everything the deck wants to do. It fogs a single thing, so you don't have to waste the fog if they just have like one creature. And then you also get to draw a card to trigger tutelage.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate just wins. Like,
yeah, that's what I had. Kiora in the side, and then I also had Prognostic Sphinx in the side. The Sphinx is definitely coming out. Kiora will probably stick around.
Right.
But even that, like, I'll have to test more with it and see how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think if anything, maybe with the way you're going, maybe Jace would be better than the Prognostic Sphinx. Because, I mean, it's feeding it, and then once you get to flip them, now you're getting the -2, so it's helping delay for you.
It's just the loot triggers some tutelage action, feeling Treasure Cruise off the loot, and then being able to flashback Treasure Cruise and stuff like that, or whatever, like flashing back fogs and stuff seems fun.
One thing I've liked about this set, too, is generally whenever you see a core set come out, there's maybe one or two viable planeswalkers. But, I mean, you have Nissa being prevalently run in your green decks. You've got Jace, it appears to be being slammed in every blue deck that's out there. And
just
then
Sultai specifically.
Yeah, and you have Liliana that's being played a lot as well. I haven't seen too much from Gideon or from Chandra.
Chandra's being played in the red decks.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's really great. I think they did a really good job with their planeswalkers this time.
And I think we're just not seeing Gideon get played that much because white hasn't found what it's going to use.
It doesn't have its payoff.
Yeah, it's not quite there. The white weenies isn't quite strong enough yet.
There's not enough weenies. It needs to go mid-range to be white. Like, because Archangel of Tides is the closest thing they have to a payoff card, just to make like attacking and blocking super awkward. But like then you're not flipping Gideon very fast, so like that gets awkward. I think it just needs the devotion payoff card, which I think is Hangerback Walker. But that's my answer to everything right now.
That card is to me right now is proving to be an all-star. It is nothing but
the card
awesome.
Is just pure value. Like, oh, it starts out low, gets big, survives Wrath, survives spot removal, essentially because it makes the same amount of power now in flyers and going wide.
But now it also puts it in this weird spot of, all right, well, I have this. We'll just say I casted it for four, so a 2/2.
Right.
All right. Well, now each turn he's making it bigger. Well, now if I kill it, now I can't just chump block it because now I have 2, 3, or 4 flyers in the air.
Yeah.
And now I can't interact, but I still have this 3/3 or this 4/4 beating down on me. So it just makes it awkward on what is the right plan
to deal with it.
To deal with it. Because if they let it go by a turn or two and you have open mana and you're just stacking on counters, it is nothing but value. Go ahead, kill it.
You're right.
Because I'm going to block whatever I can with it and try and get my flyers out.
It's like you have to kill it and then board wipe. It feels a lot like Whisperwood in that aspect. Like you have to kill it and then board wipe. You can't board wipe with it out because you just, I get a bunch of things left behind.
But then to really top it off, it's an artifact. So you can put it in any deck.
True story.
Yeah. There is no deck that it's bad in.
Yeah.
Mono red, it's going to clog the board. Go ahead and kill it. I'm just going to put hopefully at least 2/1/1 flyers out there. It's just an all-star. It's Craig Wesco did a suspicion on its card value. He says he thinks it's going to go no less than $20. And when rotation hits, I think we're going to see that card spike quite a bit.
I agree. It goes in every deck. It's going to be a standard staple for until something outclasses it, which I don't see happening in the near future. And like I said, it's just like, it even plays defense so well. because you cast it for whatever, you leave it up one mana in it to block and activate, and usually you're going to trade up and then get a bunch of flyers to keep chump blocking or just go on the offensive. Like,
yeah, that's something I wanted to bring up too, because I watched that mistake happen next to me where the hanger back was a 2/2. The guy swings in with a 2/2, I guess looking to trade. I don't know what he was going for, but right. Of course, block,
activate,
and, yep. You know, before damage, and then yeah, you're like, oh, well.
Yep, now hanger back's bigger and it ate something.
Yeah, just like, ate that thing coming at me.
It's really nice. I found, like, it's one of the saving graces for Thopter control against mono red for that same reason. Like, you cast it at one, and then, on you know, with two mana, so then you get three mana when they're casting their Rabble Master. So when they finally attack with the Rabble Master, you can block, activate, make it a 2/2 trade, and still get two Thopters to trade with other goblin tokens left over, or Founder Street Denizen, or whatever you need to kill with the one toughness.
Yeah, for the aggro decks, it makes it possible as a creature board wipe, which is weird as it is, because I'm going to block your big thing, or specifically with Rabble Master, I'm going to block your big thing, and then the result, I'm going to take out your tokens with my tokens, but it was just pure value on my end.
Exactly.
All from one card, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's just such a value card that... Which is... When I heard Wizards was trying to go to, like, a value creature, like, going away from spells, which upsets me as a control player, going to value creatures, I'm like, man, I don't know if creatures can be that good. Oh, Hanger Backwalker's really good.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first value creature that I've seen that I'm just like, okay, Wizards, I can maybe get behind this.
Yeah, maybe more of this, and I'll be all right.
Yeah. Instead of just rhinos.
Now, my big question, I was unable to make game day. Did you guys see anything out of Green Red Devotion or Green Red Ramp or anything? That's the play style that I'm in. I've seen it do well in a couple of the opens and not the Pro Tour. It was there. But
there wasn't any at the local game store, but I mean, that's just like a small meta.
We definitely need to make that point that it was, what, 9 people total 12, showed up? 12. 12 total was what we got to. That's not horrible, but it was definitely too small to really, like...
Try to gauge what the meta is going to be in here.
Especially, like, I don't try to gauge meta at local game stores anyway. Like, when I'm going to a local game store for, like, FNM, sure, I'll be like, oh, there's a lot of this. I'll put some of this in my sideboard. But, like, it's not how I determine opens or Pro Tour... Or
even like IQs and PPTQs are so much different than game day. I mean, game days are pretty like casual affair.
Yeah.
Well, I'd even look at that as possibly something, since we're talking about the standard metas. When you go to some of these larger events, don't go there with the sideboard that you expect to play on Friday Night Magic. Go there with the sideboard of what you expect. If Abzan's big, you're going to top8decks.com and anything. Yeah. And you're seeing 60% of the field is Abzan, we'll put cards in your sideboard go to Abzan. Because now we're talking, you know, anywhere from, what was the last open in Richmond? 750 people?
Something like that.
Something like that. I mean, you're going to
need a real broadsword for something
you need to figure out what cards are good for your deck to beat what you think you're going to see.
I think a lot of that just comes down to what's your bad matchup.
Yeah.
Like, you should know. Like, I mean, it's hard too if you're just like, hopping to a deck and you're like, oh, I have this deck that I just hopped to. I don't know what the bad matchup is. Like, finding a sideboard gets rough sometimes.
It's a process, that's for sure.
Let your good games be good, but save your sideboard for those hard to win games and load your cards in there, because if you steal one of those games or even game one, I mean, now you're at the edge and now you have cards to make that matchup even better.
Yeah, and I don't, like, a lot of people are like, oh, I see this deck a lot, so I'm going to sideboard for it. Well, if you already have a good matchup, don't make a good matchup better.
Yeah.
You're like, you're just wasting slots for that.
Yeah, so I want to talk some about this Thopter deck, though, because I know it's getting a lot of traction. A lot of people are talking about the shop. Chris, I know you ordered this stuff, right? You want to try it out?
Yes. I saw the blue-red Thopters, and before it even made the top eight, I had seen a lot of chat on it online, and I kept bugging y'all. Had anyone seen the deck tech? Yeah. Anyone seen?
I watched. It was at the Pro Tour, and like there was multiple people. Like Channel Fireball was on it, LSV, and all of them were on it. And then there's also people like separate from them that didn't test them also on the deck with pretty much the exact 75. So it was one of those decks that just like
kind of built itself.
Right. It was there. People were waiting for it, and then they got some War Artifact stuff and Origins, and here's the deck.
The biggest thing I saw, the difference in the two different decks from the two big groups that were playing it, where some people were running the Kia Pia and
Kieran Nalar, Shauna's parents.
The one where you get additional Thopters when it comes out.
Then it has the sac abilities, what they would throw an artifact deal to.
Yep.
The other one was running Whirler Rogue. Yeah. The other one was running Whirler Rogue, which makes two artifacts, but then you can tap two artifacts and make something unblockable.
Yeah.
Which I really like that tech because they're running Ghostfire Blade anyway,
mm-hmm.
which is nice to suit up, but then you can tap Ghostfire Blade to make something unblockable. So into something that normally doesn't do anything besides pump, like, oh, I can tap this to also make something unblockable. Yeah.
I mean, even if you haven't seen it, everyone knows it runs Ensoul Artifact, which takes any artifact and turns it into a 5/5, which people put it on the Darksteel Citadel. So now you have a 5/5 indestructible. The card I really like, the spice that they added to it, because they were looking for that one, is Phyrexian Revoker.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the pithing needle, right?
Yeah, with
the green red matchup, there's nothing like putting a Phyrexian Revoker out on whatever their little mana generator is now.
Mystic or carry added.
Yeah, because we were talking to one person. They said your chances, if you can turn one a mana generator to win that game, is 50% higher just by hitting the mana generator.
Yeah, because you're turned faster than everybody. And so, what you're doing is already better for the mana cost. Like,
yeah.
Pelucranos is a 5/5 for 4. That's already great stats. When it's coming down on turn 3, like, crap. Like,
soul level.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're able to Phyrexian Revoker and slow them down, I mean, you can keep something in there to try and interact with them later on or just win earlier.
Yeah, and it's nice to shut off Planeswalkers too.
Yep.
Because, like, aggro decks usually don't... The aggro decks have to ignore Planeswalkers. They don't have answers for Planeswalkers typically. And they don't want to throw creatures at it because they're trying to be aggressive and kill the player. So they can't, like... They just have to ignore Planeswalkers, which is nice to just have a Revoker to be like, oh, I'll play this Revoker, name that Planeswalker. Now I really don't care. Just
ignore it entirely.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Take down Elspeth, take down Xenagos, anything that just...
don't get to Elspeth out of aggro, but...
Right, but just in case, yeah, it's right. One of those things that you just... As an aggro player, if you see that, you're... Well, great, yeah. I got three blockers to go through each turn.
Yeah, and you can still Ensoul it and suit it up and make it big if you need to.
I don't even hate the line of if they're about to play their sixth land on the next turn, just the preemptive naming Elspeth.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of times that's the last ditch effort. There's three dudes to chump block.
So. Yep.
It plays the standard Hangerback Walker. I mean, it does work.
Yep. It's too good. Too good.
You got the Thopter Spy Networks in the side, which to me, they're just value. You're getting paid to play the game.
I think that was like the big reason I dismissed the artifact deck at first, because like looking at it, it's all the best cards for that deck in my opinion are four drops: Chandra's Parents, the Whirler Rogue, and the Thopter Spy Network. And you just can't run all that. Yeah. Like them being able to like find how many four drops were right is actually pretty good. But that's why I dismissed it at first. It's like, I saw it. Everybody saw it. Like, oh, there's artifacts here. There's artifacts there. Like, you can make this deck. And I was just like, no. Like,
yeah, not feeling it at first.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why maybe I looked at the Mike Segrest, the top 8 version, because it didn't run the Chandra's Parents. It focused its red more on the Shrapnel Blast and the collateral damage. The cheap stuff to interact with. You're not having to get to double red.
Which is another cute interaction with Hangerback Walker.
Yeah.
Throw a walker, get some Thopters, like, yay.
Yeah, because I got to play against this deck yesterday. And
me
like
too.
Yeah, and it was, like, it was interesting. The only problem I don't know is the list that we played against at game day, I don't know if that was, like, the complete
75. I've played against them a couple times now, and it's pretty close.
Okay, so it pretty much is. Because I'll be honest, that deck, like, when it falters or when you mess up its game plan a little bit, it kind of feels like a budget deck. Like it's
running Ornithopter's main.
Minus the insoles, I ordered everything but the Ornithopter's for like $43.
Yeah, it's a pretty cheap deck.
Even the insoles only spiked to $5 at the time, you know?
Right, and that was pretty ridiculous. So, they spiked. That's like for uncommons, I consider the highest one should be Stoke the Flames at like $4 when it was hanging around there. The fact that insole jumped was like, I don't see that.
It makes sense just because it's the same set. It's a low purchase set, being M15, and then
true.
We just talked about before we started recording today how some of us had thrown away some insoles. I know I gave some away,
because you're looking at it.
And yeah, it's like goofy. I don't ever need.
I mean,
those.
I did draft it once for fun.
Drafted. It's good,
but that even then was like, it was the super questionable draft
clunky,
deck.
Yeah. Very suspect draft deck.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, that's kind of what I took away from the matchups. I mean, I was playing Fog against it, and like Hangerbacks aren't a big deal. It's like the one matchup they're not an all-star. Yeah. But the biggest thing was like, I mean, I think he turned 2 and sold me one time, and that put some pressure on me pretty quick. And then
right.
Chandra's parents were nice to kind of keep that like looming threat. I had to keep like dispersing it and trying to deal with it, but
because it tries to burn you out at the end between shrapnel blast and like Chandra's parents.
Yeah, just get you close enough and then finish it off.
They're saying that the pro tour the magic number is 10, because once you get to 10, they can just insole something, like, insole a flyer, hit you for 5, and shrapnel blast you for 5. Like, it can close a game very quick, which is scary, and like it's super aggressive. Like if they just turn to the insole, like most people can't deal with it. It's the problem when they have like, oh, I drew a bunch of ornithopters and springleaf drums, and you're like,
cool.
Yeah. Like,
awesome. Yeah, no, I had the two most stressful turns were there was two turns where I was at 5 life. He had only cast one shrapnel blast.
Yep.
And I had to dictate a crucifix out. So he was drawing two every turn. And I was just like sitting there like,
am I dead? Am I dead yet?
Yeah, and I don't know if he realized like I was at 5 or what, because he didn't seem to have the same urgency. I mean, I'm sitting across the table like, are we just done here? Like, you got it. Whereas he was kind of slow rolling it, but yeah, he didn't get it. I was able to get like a radiant fountain to kind of bounce out of that range and some counter magic up, and then, you know, sit chill a little bit. But it was a pretty fun matchup. But yeah, I did notice like game one, I was able to bounce something that was in soul. I think it was a springleaf drum. And then after that, it was just like ornithopters and springleaf drums.
It has the same draws I consider bad for like green red devotion. We're like, it's late game, and here comes Mystics and Mana Dorks.
Oh, sweet, a carry added. Awesome.
Right, exactly. And that's just like, that's just the cost of playing those decks.
Yeah, like, I agree.
If you're trying to ramp out, like having the ramp early, you're probably going to win. Trying the ramp late, and you're probably going to lose. Like, that's just the, it's the same with control decks that are splitting between counter spells and removal. When you want the removal, you're always going to draw the counter spell. And when you want the counter spell, you have the removal, and you get in that awkward state of not necessarily having the right thing, but when it all comes together, it feels great.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. So we're coming up on time for this segment. So before we get out of it, I want to go through the room and kind of get your feelings on each deck, like whether you would recommend it or not. So I figure we'll do Turbo Fog. We'll do Blue Red Thopter and Abzan Rally.
Okay. The kind of the new breakout decks.
Yeah. So we'll go around and each person just, a thumbs up or thumbs down, whether you would suggest someone pick it up. If you want to give a quick sentence about why, feel free.
Sure.
Chris is figuring out thumbs up, thumbs down. Are we good to go? Yeah. All right, Alex, you can go ahead and kick it off.
I would say for the Thopters, it's a thumbs down, simply for the fact that it rotates out in like 2 months. Like, it loses the insole shrapnel blast spring. It loses too much. It rotates out. For right now, it's a cheap deck. Pick it up if you want to.
Yeah, I was just saying, if people have it, would you still?
Yeah, if you have it, sure. Yeah, I just don't want to. It's rotating out. You're not going to get much play with it. And I like to play the same deck over and over to just hammer in how the deck works. Rally is another one of those decks where it's combo. If you're a combo player, you love it. If you're not, don't even touch it.
Yeah. It might be a good place for people who only play standard if you want to try out combo.
Right. And Turbo Fog, I actually like. I'll give Turbo Fog a thumbs up.
Hey, all right. All right, Rob.
I'm going to agree with Alex on Blue Red Thopters. The deck is rotating out. If you want to get into it, yeah, go for it. I mean, your big investment is going to be Hangerback Walker, and Hangerback Walker, I don't think is going to go
away. Buy anyway.
Yeah.
It's not going away anytime soon. Right. But if you have something that you like, I would say just stick with it and keep playing that. But I mean, $43 to build out the rest of this deck. If you have it, pitch it. Sure. Abzan Rally. I play combo in Modern and Legacy. In Standard, I can see combo decks being even worse with the luck on the draw.
Right.
I mean, maybe it's just me and I'm a terrible player, but I would not go with Abzan Rally unless you're really just bored and you have no idea what you want to try and you're like, oh, this looks fun, let's give it a shot.
I just don't think it's a deck you just pick up. Like, there's a lot of interaction there.
Yeah, that's true. The only other issue, too, is, yeah, I'm thinking of it, okay, I can think along the lines of the interactions because I've played combo decks before, but your average player, I don't think, will. The Turbo Fog deck, yes, it's fun. you're gonna catch people off guard with it. And if you enjoy making people angry, I've heard stories from Bobby about making people rage quit on Moto, and I smile every time. So, yes, definite for Turbo Fog.
All right, Chris.
Blue Red Thopters, I'm a thumbs up for it. I don't think you can really complain for a standard deck for less than $100.
Yeah, true statement.
Plus, I play things that just look fun.
Yeah.
You know, I don't always have to be super competitive. So I'm all in on Blue Red Thopters. Thumbs up. Abzan Rally. It's cool. It looks neat. I think it's has several complications. That's the only biggest thing is if you like combo, yes, but combo's brittle to counter magic. The other thing I look at is if you start missing triggers, now you're just housed. Because if you forget to sack to the husk, now all your creatures are exiled and you got to refill the graveyard again.
Very true. Very true.
And then if you're already playing a deck, we'll lead right into the turbo fog. So you're mowing your deck and they're mowing your deck. Now you're just losing twice as fast. I really like the turbo fog deck. You can just see people who are playing it. They're getting, they're scratching their necks. They're gritting their teeth. It becomes real awkward or uncomfortable for them because you're doing nothing turn after turn after turn. And it just irritates them. But I really like the turbo fog deck. Sphinx's Tutelage is probably one of my favorite cards out of Origins, and I just want to see it broken.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on the same page as Blue Red Thopters. I think it's a cool deck. I think if you have the parts or if you don't mind spending the money, go for it. But just definitely be aware that, you know, depending on what's printed in Battle for Zendikar, this deck could be gone just as fast as it showed up.
Right.
Abzan Rally, the jury's still out. Like, it won an open, and that's still, I still feel a little bit uneasy about the deck. And I kind of take back a little bit of what I said earlier. Yeah, if you've never played combo, this might not be the right deck to jump in on and test the waters, because it's definitely, it's not a very clean combo is what I would say. It kind of feels like you're brute forcing a combo together each game. And, you know, so if that's your style and you want to try it, go for it. But again, this one could also be gone pretty quickly. And then, yeah, Turbo Fog, like, man, all right, so first I have to give a disclaimer that I cannot say this deck is like a tier one deck right now.
Right.
Like, I can't say it. So be aware that it is a bit of a fringe deck. Unfortunately, not a lot of people have picked it up, so you can't find a lot of good notes. I do have a pretty clean list that I think we'll post with this cast if anyone wants to take a look, because I do think it's better than most of the lists I've come across so far, which is new for me. I'm not typically a deck builder, but it's a fun deck. People reacted very differently. I had one person say that even losing to it was fun because it was so crazy. And then I had another guy who won, but still was pretty upset about it. So, like,
well, it kind of goes with Fog and Rally together. Like, nobody has sideboard for it.
Yeah.
So they're just like,
I just got to keep, you know, plugging away and doing what I'm doing. I can't really do much about it. But I think it also messes people up and they play a little bit oddly against it at times because it's new territory for a lot of players.
Right.
Older players have seen Turbo Fog. They know it comes in and out. Someone sitting next to me made a comment about how everyone's playing Turbo Fog now. And I'm like, well, you know, it's good now. Like, for the first time in a while. Yeah.
But it was also the guy who's known for playing Turbo Fog when it wasn't good.
But yeah, so I mean, overall, though, these three decks, I think any of them are worth a shot. Just, you know, know a little bit about them and know what you're getting yourself into. But other than that, I feel like they're all pretty good suggestions. All right, guys, let's get out of this segment. We'll be back in a minute for some sideboarding talk.
So this week, I would like to give a special shout out to Event Horizons out of Raleigh, North Carolina. It's just an overall great store. A few weeks ago, I had the misfortune where I ended up losing a deck there. I didn't realize it until I got home. It was about a 4-hour drive. So I gave the store a call and told them about my deck. Turns out it was stolen. And so they're able to retrieve the deck. They banned the guy who took it. And then they mailed it to me free of charge. So with this, I mean, Event Horizon's a great store. If you're ever in the area, definitely check it out.
All right, everybody. So we've just finished game one. Let's move to the sideboard. I figured we kind of open this up with going around talking about just one of our favorite sideboard cards. Alex?
Karanos in Modern.
Yep, that's a good one. Rob?
Abrupt Decay, again, in Modern.
Yep. All right, see a theme here. Chris?
Mine right now would probably be Self-Inflicted Wound. I'm playing it in Modern.
All right, some more Modern. Right. Yeah, and honestly, I think my favorite is Anger of the Gods right now in Modern. Yeah, running it in Escape Shift.
Yep.
But yeah, so, I mean, it's... Looking at sideboards, it's important that I think one of the things new players fall into is they find a deck list they like online and they copy the whole 75.
Right.
And sideboards, you know, they change a lot more. They fluctuate way more than your main deck does. They're changing based on many things. I mean, the level of the tournament, the size of the tournament, the
what
location. Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of things to take into mind, and it's definitely good that you should probably spend maybe 5-10 minutes before any tournament, just saying, are these the 15 I want? What should I adjust?
And also with that, like, everybody, when they practice game one. They goldfish their deck pre-sideboard. Right, yeah. Just because you don't know what you're going to sideboard. But you play, if you go to three games every round, you play two sideboarded games. So in reality, you play more sideboarded games than...
The main deck, yeah. Yeah. You play at least the same amount.
Exactly.
And only, you know, and possibly more, so.
Yeah, and then so being able to sideboard correct is very important. You can lose a lot of games that way of, oh, I didn't see this card. I didn't think it'd be in there. Then, oh, I got beat by it because my answer is still in my sideboard.
Yeah.
And things like that. And that comes down to, like, the leveling of right. Magic, like, is my opponent going to sideboard out this card? Do I still need to bring in the answer?
Does he know I'm doing this, so he's going to do this instead?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, those kind of scenarios. So, I mean, before we get into too deep of a level, let's start at a higher level and just look at what cards do you like to see in sideboards? Just a theme, not specifics.
Typically, you either have, like, control and answer style cards, things you're going to go late, counter spells, wraths, things like that. And occasionally you'll get aggressive with your sideboard, bring in lower cost creatures, things like that. Yeah. Those are the kind of the two sideboard sides.
And then rarely you see, you know, like the transformational sideboard.
True.
Switch into an entirely different game plan, but that's pretty fringe case. You don't really see
usually eternal formats more than standard. But going into like control, like sweepers, like that's where your conditional sweepers come in, things like Drown in Sorrow. Like, just -2/-2 for aggressive decks, things like
counter
that.
Counter spells are a big one. Swapping out certain ones for others. Do you need Disdainful Strokes? Do you need Negates?
Right. And Stubborn Denial in certain decks out of the sideboard, things like that. Like, the conditional counter spells. Yeah. Whereas, like, normally, like, for control decks, this is officer main. But then, on a different game, maybe I just need Negates is fine.
So, you guys, I mean, what's your process? Do you guys have a sideboard process? What kind of goes through your mind?
I know whenever I go to look to sideboard, one of the things I look at is who has the stronger late game. If their deck, hands down, is the stronger late game, I have to figure out what cards I'm going to bring in that will either reset, like the sweepers like we were talking about, mm-hmm. but you still have to have that potency to try and end it soon, because even if you have all the control cards, if you only have answers and you don't have anything that allows you to win, all you're doing is just playing Magic longer and still losing, like, in my opinion.
Like alternate win cons, like Keranos in Modern for me, and like Twin. Like, oh, I can take out Twin Combo, bring in Keranos.
Or
it's another win con.
You know, like we were talking, if you have to bring in cheaper, leaner creatures just to get it done faster. All right, yeah. I have the End Hostilities in case for some reason I go to turn 6 and I don't want to wipe the board and either burn them out or push my last few creatures out. But you just have to evaluate. I have to evaluate who owns the late game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everyone has cards to go late game, but who's stronger in the late game?
Who wants to be there?
Yeah. And you got to decide, hey, that's not for me. He has a stronger late game, so what am I going to bring in to make me go leaner and faster?
Right. Yeah, so I think game plan's a good thing to look at. What angle am I taking in this matchup? And I think that plays a big role in how you sideboard. I think a lot of people fall into that trap of, I need to answer that enchantment. So I bring in all this enchantment hate. Well, now what do I do?
Yeah, now I can't win. Like, yeah. I answered his enchantment, but now what do I do? Like, and a lot comes out with like different creatures in the sideboard. Things like Hushwing Griff that comes in, it stops some enter the battlefield effects, but it's also a beater. Like, it does its job, utility. Things like Anafinza in Junk for the rally decks, because it exiles creatures, but it's also just a good beater.
Yeah.
And going back to Return of Ravnica and Theros block, but Mistcutter Hydra, boarding that in.
That's still standard right now.
Yeah, it's still standard, but it's not seeing a lot of play, though, in sideboards right now because control is not as prevalent as what it used to be.
Right.
So you would keep it in the sideboard, and it's like, oh, it's control, and then you just swap out, like, Polukranos with it or just one other creature that you know it's always going to get countered. Let's bring in something that's going to stick around.
Right.
Yeah. Like, my process is usually I start with, first, what obvious cards do I have in the 15 that are just going to be great in this match?
Right.
And then I go back to my original 60 and see which cards are just dead. Because sometimes there's sideboard cards you have that they're not great. They're not hosers. They're not going to be amazing, but they still might be, you know, light years better than a card that's sitting in your main deck in that matchup. So I think players, especially newer players, need to keep in mind, like, you want the composition of your 60 to make sense after sideboard.
Right.
You can't just jam a bunch of stuff in there and call it a day. So I think being mindful of that helps a lot.
And then also not taking away too much from your initial game plan.
Yeah.
Like, there's some argument for shaving. Like, I don't have enough dead cards. I have to bring in some more stuff. I'm going to shave a card here or there. I have, like, a play set. But you still have to have those cards to win.
Yeah, enough of them to have that potent threat.
Right.
Collected Company is a great example.
Right.
Yep. We were talking about yesterday, where if you side in too many non-creatures, now all of a sudden you're whiffing on Collected Companies.
Yeah, if you take out some creature like Thoughtseize or Downfall or whatever, mm-hmm. that kind of card, then, oh, wait, I just whiffed on a Collected Company. And
yeah, so it gets to a point where you have to consider, do I just board out the Collected Companies? Do I board down to two? Or do right. I just not board in as much hand disruption or, you know, non-creatures?
A big one right now, too, is in the control style decks with Clash of Wills.
Yeah.
Do you leave Clash of Wills in a game, too, while you're like, am I on the play? Am I on the draw? Is it good? Like, am I against like a control mirror where I just want to negate for a hard counter by right, trying to clash with them having the same amount of mana as me and stuff like that?
And that's a big thing too, is looking at, are you on the play or on the draw?
Oh, yeah.
Because there are times too where you're going to need to go back to your sideboard between games two and three,
right?
Because now you're no longer on the play, you're on the draw, and some cards just aren't good to have in your opening hand. And generally, that's only where they're good at, to stop that early game Thoughtseize or to prevent that early game creature. But now that you're on the play, you're on the you're on the draw, you have that extra card advantage. You are being a little bit more of the aggressor, hopefully. And yep. You might not need the cards to counteract what your opponents are trying to do to disrupt your hand or disrupt your board state.
Yeah, that's right. A good point for Clash of Wills, because there's a lot of players, like, I mean, Magic grows so much that I'm sure we play people at tournaments that didn't play with Syncopate.
Yeah.
You know, even though it feels like it was here yesterday. But you know, there's cards like that where, yeah, when you start on the draw and you're a land behind the whole game, it's not as great, you know? And if you, especially when you're playing like control mirrors where you're trying to hit all your land drops, like they're usually going to be one step ahead. And a lot of times it's just dead to hand. So yeah, bringing into gates and even like Disdainful Strokes might just be strictly better.
Yeah. And then also coming down to that is like, when do you want to be on the hand disruption plan?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people run Thoughtseize or Duress or Despise, one of those cards in the sideboard. When do you want to be on that plan? Is their deck just resilient enough to where they're just gonna have multiple copies and that's not even where you want to be?
Right.
Like, are there cards that's the only answer you have to, and you have to bring them in because you have to catch it? Like Firecraft right now can't be countered. Like, you have to get it out of the hand. You have to Duress it or Thoughtseize it. Like, bringing in Duress or Thoughtseize against red isn't always good, but now you kind of have to a little bit.
Yeah, it puts them at an odd spot because, yeah, mono red's kind of a great example for the deck you don't want to Thoughtseize. Like, right. It usually just ends up feeling real bad. So yeah, so being mindful of that, you know, again, comes to the matchup. How quick is their hand? How quick is their deck? I mean, if you're worried about an Elspeth, that's a great Thoughtseize target. You got plenty of time to get it. If you're worried about, you know, a two or a three drop, then you might not worry about bringing them in. Maybe find other answers.
Yep. And that comes down to, like, the sweepers, too. Like, do I have sweepers in my sideboard to kind of clean up some of this stuff? Can I let it go until I can just clean it up, and do I get the better reset? But sometimes you just don't have the better reset, and that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so at the end of the day, it all always kind of comes back to this, what is the game plan?
Right.
So, I mean, physically, do you want to talk about how you physically sideboard? Because I'm a big fan of, I get lazy at smaller tournaments, I don't do as much, but I'm a big fan of the shuffle the entire sideboard into the deck and then go through and make
pull 15 out.
Yeah.
I don't. Like, I understand the merit for that of, like, oh, if my opponent knows I'm sideboarding, like, seven cards, they're going to be like, oh, crap, he's
going to a different game plan.
Or right,
he's going to
right.
creatures, or, yeah.
At smaller tournaments, I don't.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I just pull seven out or whatever, and like, okay, like I'm not worried about it. At big events, I'm not a fan of the shuffle 15 in because I forget. Like going into it, I know like all these are the dead cards. I need to pull them out. But now I'm looking through a bunch of cards. I might forget a dead card and things like that. So I typically don't.
Next thing you know, you got 62, and you're like, crap, why did I board this?
What am I doing right now? Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
I personally don't do the whole 15 as of right now, because even at smaller tournaments, you just want to go there and play clean Magic. All right, when I go in between rounds, I have a good general idea of what I want to take out, what I want to take in.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hurry up and make that swap and just start thinking about the cards I put in while I'm shuffling. Is this going to get me there?
Yeah.
And if not, because I've did that transition real quick and I'm not trying to find 15 cards, I only had to swap five. Is this... That gives me time. Is this going to do it? Or do I need to sideboard a little bit more? Or sometimes, you know, I'll take five out, put five in, take three out, put two in. So my opponent doesn't know how many really what I've pulled out and put
back
in.
Yeah, going back and forth enough, they'd have to really be like you know, hawking you.
Five, three,
usually
two.
They're worried about their sideboards. So they're not even watching you.
They're not paying that much attention. I mean, normally, and it's especially in standard, it's I'm going to play my game. You're going to play your game. We're going to see if we can just stop each other. Whether you have seven and I have two.
And that comes down to two, like, is the matchup good already? If the matchup's good already, I'm not gonna have a bunch of sideboard cards for the matchup anyway. There's been several games where I'm just like, boarding these like two or three cards, it's all
and,
I need.
And most of the time those two or three cards are just win more.
I
mean, that's really all they are. The game's in my court, and these just help me win even more.
In the event I see this, okay, now I have a possible way to answer, but outside of that, I have this game.
Yeah.
One new thing that I kind of learned with this Turbo Fog deck is every round I would find myself when I'd go to sideboard that I couldn't take away that many cards from the deck. I mean, it's a deck that just has it needs some amount. I would say upwards of 55, 56 cards that just need to stay in the main.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go back and rebuild my sideboard with that in mind, knowing that I don't need to bother having more than four cards for any given matchup because I'm probably not going to side them in. There were a lot of times where I'd have cards where I'm like, yeah, this would be good here, but I don't want to take out Dictates. I don't want to take out, you know, like my main cards here. So I only sat in a few and it worked.
That's come down to also, like I said, can't lose the core of the deck. Can't lose your game plan. Knowing what that is. And just trying to like accent it, I think is the best way to go about it.
It's a little spice.
Right.
Yeah. So I think knowing how many like sort of flex spots you have in your main definitely comes in handy.
Yeah. And keeping track too. Take notes. To take a sheet of paper or take a small notepad with you to every event, even in something as small as an FNM or all the way up to an open or invitational. Mm. Take notes for your matchups so then you can start to see what cards in my sideboard are just wasting space and is there a better card out there? Because surely there is.
Yeah, what did I just never bring in?
Right.
What did I bring in and didn't like?
Yeah, or what are, and sometimes you just have to, if you have a really bad matchup, like control against mono red. You just have to say this six cards are from mono red and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Like you just have to. There's certain matchups you just have to do that. So then you just have a narrow sideboard to work with. So making use of that narrow sideboard is really important.
Yeah.
Like you can't just have another dead card in there you didn't realize was dead. Like you can't. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Which really comes into building your sideboard. So how do you guys go about building your sideboard? Do you just base it on like week to week, it's like, this week I'm going to try this 15 cards, or do you build it out to your worst matchups? Do you build it out to what you think the meta is going to be, or what the most popular decks are going to be?
For me, usually I'm on control, so I have my red.
Yep.
Red plan. Yep,
the red package.
Yep, that's just there. And the rest of it is typically, I don't have many board cards against mid-range decks, because that's what I like to play against. So I don't worry about that matchup, hardly ever, especially running like Ashiok and stuff. Like, I'm just naturally good against that. I'll have like two or three cards that naturally catch that. I'll have a few cards for the control mirrors. That's typically like negate, you know, other conditional counter spells that are just good in that. And I like for me personally, I like a hand disruption package, either Thoughtseize or Duress, and that could come in a lot of matchups. Right. So that's kind of like a utility also slot. And then I typically like an alternate win con or two. For me personally, that's just how I like to do my sideboard.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, it's mainly just how can I better suit other mid-range matches, because I play mid-range myself. The aggro match, if I can make it past turn four, then I'm solid. But, I mean, that's with any aggro matchup.
Right.
But, yeah, it really depends on... I try to gauge what is going to be a popular deck that I'm going to see and build my sideboard out to that. It doesn't always work well because, obviously, things keep changing. But you can kind of gauge it off of that. And then, the control matchups for me, I need to find ways to be quicker. So I do have a little bit of an aggro package for me to get through those control matchups, because control wants to play that mid-range player. It's like, you want to go late game? I want to have enough mana to counter two things each turn.
Yeah, right. Or just get to the point where you're top decking and I have a counter spell and it doesn't matter.
Right.
I personally look at my two biggest ones are, what is my worst matchup and what do I expect to see? Now, if my worst matchup and what I expect to see are the same, obviously, I dedicate more cards to my sideboard. But if I just want to make whatever my bad matchups are increasingly better. So if I expect to see, like, I play a lot of Jeskai when I can.
Mm.
So I like to bring in cards that help me against Abzan. Abzan, I don't think, is one of my better matchups. Yeah, if I go a little bit more aggro route, I can get there quicker. But I just need cards that either help reset or keep the rhinos off the table.
Things like roast that aren't necessarily main boardable.
Things that even if it does hit, I only take three for the enter the battlefield trigger. You know, stuff that my smaller creatures just go in and they get their value for them of just like, you know, constant little hits and ticks, but that constant pressure.
Right.
So I'm just looking for the cards that make my worst matchups better, and then what allows me to what I think I'm going to see that even if it's not my worst matchup, but it's a close, those other few slots that are going to make me better. Because I'm not real big on what is already good, like making it better. If you're already at a good matchup, keep it at a good matchup and make your bad matchups a lot better.
I like to look a lot at situations, not necessarily decks. So maybe if I'm playing a control deck, I know I'm weak to aggressive creatures.
Right.
So aggro decks and leaner mid-range decks, so that I'm bringing in things like, you know, I like to add Anger of the Gods, things like that.
Drown
of you
Sorrow.
Know, yeah, exactly. These kind of cheaper situational sweepers that get you there.
Yeah.
And also, like, bad matchup, yeah, that's a huge one. I mean, what's my weakness? What do I just die to? And then beyond that, I'm a big fan of, like, splash sideboard cards, things where it's good against two or three different decks.
Utility cards.
Yeah, exactly. I like things that are nice and well-rounded. I'm also a huge fan of the hand disruption package if it's not already in the main or you know, buffing it up with the sideboard. Because hand disruption is just kind of one of those ones worth control. Like, depending on the meta, sometimes it's good in the main. Sometimes you just need to bring it in for certain matchups. But it just has such good utility to it that you can kind of look at your sideboard and think about the matchup and how game one went and go, okay, I need a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little less of this out of the main, and just kind of just tune, basically.
And even with hand disruption, like, even if it's not necessarily, like, good to get a card out of the hand, just having perfect information sometimes is just where you need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Even just taking a peek, knowing what's going on.
Yep. And then they're, like, getting into also going against aggressive decks. What are your favorite, like, life gain cards for a sideboard?
Yeah.
Because, like, right now, a lot of people are playing, like, Feed the Clan. If you're in green, Erishin Cleric has been big in a white-based. Yeah. Same with Surge of Righteousness, the Destroyer Red, Gain 2, things like that. Cure has been around forever.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Life Gain's one of those ones that have the preface with, like, I hate Life Gain cards. It doesn't, I mean, at the end of the day, it's doing nothing.
Well, like, hang on. I would say pure Life Gain cards, like Feed, sure, but, like, destroying and gaining life, like Cure, you know,
sure, yeah,
destroy a creature, gain 2, yeah, like that's just value. Style. Yeah, yeah.
You can't say you don't like Life Gain cards, Mr. I cried when Sphinx Revelation rotated.
True, yeah, true. That card did two things, though.
Right, but...
So, I mean, but that's, like, what kind of what Alex was saying is, like, but cards that strictly say, like, Feed the Clan, which I was running two of with Turbo Fog right now, but cards that just say you gain whatever amount of life, period. Oh, God, those cards feel bad to draw. They feel bad to have, like, because it's not, life is, you know, I mean, that's a topic for a whole nother podcast, but it's a resource. It's not, you know, a tracker of who's winning. It's not, you know, basically with control decks, it's am I dead or not? Or playing against Siege Rhinos, am I at three or not? Like, you know, am I in that instant kill, that KO range or not? And so I have a hard time boarding those in. But I do, like, right now I am running the two Feed the Clans. In Turbo Fog, they're obviously not great because I'm never getting that Ferocious Trigger.
Yeah.
I think decks that do get the Ferocious Trigger, it's a great sideboard card because essentially, like, in burn matchups, it doesn't say you gain 10 life. It says counter 3 or 4 burn spells.
Exactly.
So in that regard, I can definitely see it because then you're fighting 4 of their cards from their hand with one of yours. So the card advantage side of it is definitely great.
And then also, what do you guys think about graveyard or, like, enchantment hate? Like, certain cards just hate a certain aspect of the game.
I think you have to be cautious because people will go so in on the enchantment hate. And maybe that enchantment game one wasn't even the greatest thing for your opponent. And he takes it out, and now you're stuck here with 3 or 4 destroy target enchantment, destroy target artifact, and he's taking them out. And maybe he just didn't know that you feared that enchantment. Maybe you squeaked out the win, but it was close enough that you're like, I don't want it to come that close again. So you're going to bring it. Yeah. Well, now I'm stuck here with, you know, we'll even say 2 or 3 destroy target enchantment cards that just do nothing. I like.
But going with that, I think it's a necessary evil. Like, especially with, like, Insol Artifact going around right now.
Yes.
Like, you need, like, Erase or some sort of destroy.
I think
destroy.
With what Origins brought, you have to have it now because you have power enchantments. You have the Sigil. You have Thopter Spy Network. You have people toying around with Ensole Artifact.
Yeah.
You know, that they're, if they're unanswered, they will just destroy. Tokens is coming back. People are starting to play with, Jace with the tokens and the Ascendancy, so it just gets stronger. Tutelage, one of my favorite enchants. Right? If you let one tutelage, you might live. If you let two or three hit the board, that's a rough game for you.
Right, which is that point where, like, yes, you kind of have to have enchantment hate, and yes, you have to bring it in, but yeah, it can be dead. It can be a dead card if they don't have it, but you have to respect it, and you have to bring it in.
Oh, yeah, and then the other thing you worry is, did I bring too much in?
Right.
Now you have to find that balance. Yeah, now he's not hitting his enchantments, or the enchantment he's hitting is like the Dictate and the Turbo Fog.
Yeah.
I have no problem drawing two cards per turn. Exactly. I'll draw two cards per turn for the whole game. Mm-hmm. It comes to the point of, now I have this dead card, do I kill it just because I feel like I'm stalling?
Yeah.
And that's what it looks like. Am I being mana efficient? That's where I'm trying to move my game to, is are we being mana efficient? And so now you have these cards you brought in that it's not efficient to take that because that's not the enchantment that hurts me. But right now in Standard, I think you have to have them.
Yeah.
Because these decks are going
to
surge.
I think that's a really good point, because it comes down to metagaming, where if there's one deck that runs one enchantment, no, we're not running enchantment cards out of the sideboard. But then, if there's four decks that are each running one or two that are really powerful, then yeah. So, I mean, it comes down to what you expect to see and how important it is in that matchup. I also think it's a good point, too, to make that you can also be too light. If you have no enchantment hate in your main board and you put one enchantment hate card on your side, there's really no point there.
The chances of you drawing that one card are pretty slim
to none, especially against like tutelage decks that might just hit it on a trigger.
Yeah,
so
just mill it over. Yep.
You either need to go in enough for it to be effective, or just hedge it as a bad match and call it a day. Or try another, maybe burn faster, maybe attack faster, another way around it.
And with enchantment hate too right now, you still have enchantment creatures. People can't forget that it hits enchantment creatures. So, Courser of Kruphix, a major one. It's life gain. It gets them through the deck quicker.
Card advantage.
Yeah, card advantage. Their land advantage, really, if they're missing their land drops, but they're ripping them off the top.
Yeah. Well, Dromoka's Command is already standard main decked in Abzan.
Yes. Yeah.
And, like, so I think Abzan gets in this weird spot, too, where, like, they have Dromoka's Command, so they don't have, like, a race or anything inside. We're like, Dromoka's Command will be fine. Well, then their opponent gets to the point where they have, like, three enchantments. They're like, sack one. Okay,
it's a relevant one.
Yeah.
There goes my, you know, whatever.
And then going into, like, a little bit into Eternal formats, you know, Modern, Legacy, what about Graveyard Hate?
Graveyard Hate is,
like,
huge.
Rest in Peace, Graveyard Hate.
I say it's a must.
Yeah. Right.
Unless if you have, I mean, that's another one where, like, if you have main deck answers, if you have, like, enough counter spells, depending on the matchup, if you have things like that, then maybe you don't need it.
But. Or if you're just quick enough, like with Infect.
Yeah. If you're playing combo or something like that. And then it comes into the certain decks too, where you can't, because you're trying to use your graveyard as a resource.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, all the Delve decks right now and Snapcaster decks. And Yeah.
With people taking advantage of the Delve mechanic, you have to have some sort of graveyard hate. Because if you just allow them to play their game willy-nilly, it makes your game harder.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is, all right, even if I'm not in the winning position, am I making it harder for them to win? Because if I make it harder for them to win, I have the chance of making them misplay.
Yeah. Well, right now there's not much graveyard hate in Standard, so that's kind of the only real big one is Tormod's Crypt right now. And then, like, I've asked this for a while now. When does Tormod's Crypt see play in Standard? Because you have Rally, you have Death Mist doing things. You know, now you have, like, Days Undoing trying to do goofy things with that. You have Delve cards still, like
Den Protector.
Yeah, Den Protector with Death Mist.
And I think the other one is Burn Away. Remember when we were playing Jeskai before and people were playing with the Becomements? I was playing Burn Away.
Right.
Just because, or even when the whip decks were real popular.
That's when I was advocating red deck players should play Burn Away with whip, because it stops all their life gain in their whip target, because it deals 5 to a creature, and if the creature dies, exile the graveyard.
Yeah, and that's huge, especially if they've hit their Shader Wayfinders or anything like that, and they've milled the top, and now they're just kind of floating. They're like dead in the water, you know, a ship with no engine. They're just sitting there, and they got to build that momentum back up, and that's your chance to capitalize. I think, especially with Rally showing how it has the potential to be strong, especially the Abzan, not necessarily the full combo, the grindy one,
mm-hmm.
where it's just taking advantage and pulling pulling cards back and slowly grinding you out. Yeah. I think Tormod's Crypt's something we have to look at, or if you're not going to play that, what am I going to do to shut their graveyard down? Because you can only fight them off so many times. You're only going to have the so many counters. And
yeah, you're only going to have spot removal so many times. They're like, oh, I just take out this piece to you know, stop them this turn. Oh, they rallied again. Well,
and,
crap.
And Abzan has no problem with that slow, grindy matchup.
They have like, Din Protector to just get back.
It's like, their life. It's their game. Like, even control, like, just slow. I'm going to slowly. You're going to use all your stuff, and I have all these resources. Now, granted, they're strung about in a graveyard, but I have ways to get to them, and it's just solid. I think graveyard hate, we definitely need to see more of it right now.
I think it's going to come up. If you look at the past 3 weeks, week one, Abzan Rally didn't do much of anything. Week two, it top 8 at one, and then it top 8 at 8 different regionals.
Right.
So
and then on top of that,
finished first in the
And then on top of that, too, like you getting into, like, Din Protector loops have always been a problem for just, oh, I'm going to Din Protector, flip a Din Protector, get back Din Protector. Like, oh, I'm just going to go to town. But then also, it just seems. It seems like it's the time for it, especially with spell mastery being a mechanic too.
Yes.
To shut off the firecraft and things like that. Like, I think it's time for it. Yeah. I think it's time for some sort of graveyard hate in the sideboard.
And there's enough uses for it that you'll get your money's worth.
And a good thing about Tormod's Crypt too, it fits in any deck.
Yeah, it costs zero.
So you can slot that right in. Yeah, and it'll start to look a little bit like modern and standard.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. But all right, so I mean, we're coming towards the end of this segment, so I thought it'd be fun to go through. And now, let's see, what is your least favorite card to have sideboarded against you?
Currently, Orbs of Warding. It just destroys Thopters because now they can't deal damage and they have hexproof. I hate playing against that card, but I play in my sideboard because it's really good.
Me, I like going in the air. So if I see a hornet's nest land across from me, I want to flip the table.
Yeah, I can see that. Chris, least favorite.
The least favorite I saw was a Narset that ultimated, and I'm playing heroic, so
yeah,
that wasn't fun. Oh, you can't do anything except swing with like 1/1s and 2/2s. Like, all right, my life's over.
Yep. Yeah, and then for me, for Turbo Fog right now, it's any blue deck bringing in negates other counter spells. It just makes that grind so much harder. I'm not equipped to go to a 7, 8, 9 land, so I usually can't fight too much over stuff. But all right, guys, so that's going to wrap it up for this week. Before we get out of here, I just want to remind everybody that we do have our website up now, so you can check that out at www.thesnapcast.com. We also have a Patreon page set up. A little bare right now, but we're working on getting some good stuff on there. There's a few subscription options, so you can check that out. You can find the link to that off of our main page. But all right, thanks for checking us out.
Oh, snap.